If you're looking to maximize your fundraising efforts, DonorBox's online donation platform is designed to help you reach your fundraising goals with ease. Discover the world of simplified, seamless fundraising at DonorBox.org. DonorBox, helping you help others.
Welcome back to the Nonprofit Hub podcast. My name is Megan Spear, and I'm your host today. Sitting down for a conversation with John Sarles, who's the president of Elevated Learning, to talk about all things leadership, right? And learning and the impact that ongoing learning can have on your organization and why it's so important. So John, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Megan. Pleased to be here.
So one of the things that I know about you and your coaching is that it relies heavily on the DISC model. Now there are, there are tons of these personality profiles, right? You know me, I'm a fan of the Myers-Briggs.
Yes, you are.
Also love the Strengths Finders. Enneagram, I think, is really interesting. I mean, there's just a whole host of all of them. But talk to me about DISC for maybe for our audience who is not familiar with that particular profile. Sure. What does it look at, and kind of why is it important?
So all of those different assessment styles you've described, I've done a bunch of them. I've done Hogan as well. I don't think you mentioned that one, but that was very interesting to actually have to sit down with a psychologist and understand some of the underpinnings and the deep recesses of who I am.
Man,
I'm conflicted about that one because it was really good to help bring self-awareness.
Yeah.
But I learned things about myself that I wasn't sure I was ready to process. So I'm putting them back in the box on the shelf. I don't want to think about
it.
The reason I'm a fan of DISC, in all sincerity though, is because most of those systems, most of those profiles, while they are great at applying self-awareness and self-actualization, I learn more about who I am. It's difficult for the average person to quickly and easily apply those concepts. And okay, so if there's something about me that I've now learned, there's something that I understand about myself, then maybe it doesn't make me feel great. How do I adapt that? How do I modify that? How do I apply this now as I engage with other people? If I'm going to connect with somebody within my organization, if I'm going to connect with a customer or a donor, how do I read them? How do I apply those larger overarching truths to understand who they are so that I'm eliminating barriers to connection and barriers to communication? I think what DISC does exceptionally well is it distills all of that into a very simple and easy to apply understanding of both self-understanding and reading other people. It's very simple methodology, and DISC is an acronym. And so each of those D, I, S, and C stand for different types of, not right or wrong, just different types of preferred personality types, what you lean into most often. So for example, I'm a C, which is a conscientious type. And what that means is I'm somebody who loves information. And you know this to be true of me.
Yes.
I may hold on making this because I want to look at the entire problem. I really want to understand what's happening in the landscape so that we don't make mistakes, and accuracy is something that like somebody like me would prize. That's great. What's the problem? Well, if I don't have a complete picture, I can become paralyzed. I can get paralysis by analysis. I want to know everything before I'm ready to move forward. Somebody like a D, who's kind of my foil, they're the opposite to me in many regards, they're action-oriented. So in the past, I had a supervisor, and I joked that I'm ready, aim, and just kind of get stuck there. He was ready, fire, aim. Before he had a complete picture, decisions made, let's go. So that if the two of us could balance each other, it would really benefit the entire organization. So that sense of awareness is something that DISC very easily brings into a conversation.
Okay, so I appreciate your explanation of C. Can you give me a brief, concise explanation of that for the other, what is it, D, I, and S, I guess?
Sure. So Ds are going to be often referred to as drivers. So they're going to be skeptical to a degree. They want proof, but at the same time, they're going to be action-oriented. They're going to default to an action mindset. They're going to be an individual who is focused on winning oftentimes. And for them, that sense of achievement and accomplishment is a big driver for them. So not necessarily as heavily people-oriented. They're going to be more focused on tasks, but they want to get things done quickly. They want to make decisions. They want to go. eyes are similarly action-oriented. They want to get things done, but they have more of a people orientation. So someone who's going to be, I guess, more commonly referred to as an extrovert. So I can see you having both D and I tendencies. And yeah, it doesn't mean that you're going to be strong one or the other. You can overlap in both of these. So you, for example, you're somebody who is action-oriented and you would default to an action mindset. Let's get things done. While at the same time, you're very people-oriented and people-focused. Engaging and connecting with others is energizing to you. Yes. If you had to work in an environment where you were removed from everyone and you were isolated, that would be your own personal nightmare. It'd be torture for you, right?
Terrible.
Exactly. So eyes are people-oriented. Then if you go to the S group, they're still going to be people-oriented, but they also have kind of a balance then in process. So the S's, they are very accepting of other people, but they do like that time to reflect. They want to be able to still think through and make wise decisions and kind of assimilate all of the data. So they're not going to be as hardline on the C side. So for me, again, if I'm alone, it's a great day. I'm thrilled. I think if you remember one time we were at a conference together and we were connecting with people and we were talking and you were just bubbling over with emotion. Because again, you and I are kind of opposite ends of the spectrum. And you looked at me and you said, "You're dying right now, aren't you?" I'm just exhausted. This takes every fiber of my being. I can do it. Yeah. But I need that time at the end of the day then to kind of sit in silence and quiet versus you, because of the way that you're wired and oriented. This was engaging. This was energizing. You were on cloud nine.
Oh, yeah.
You could do that all day, every day. So it's understanding how to lean into those different mindsets and default behaviors. Again, not that one's right, one's wrong, but understanding how you're wired, knowing where somebody else's strengths are as well, and how to leverage that most effectively. Again, sending me to a conference to engage with new people as a business development rep might not be the best choice. Probably not a great idea. Giving me an opportunity to do deep work and drive strategy forward, that might be a better use of my mindset behavior.
Yeah. So then if somebody in a nonprofit setting, is in a leadership role, whether that's as an ED and CEO or somebody who's heading up a department, I like what you said about the fact that it has to start with the self, right? I need to understand who I am and what my strengths and giftedness is. But then, and I ask this because I have a tendency to, you know, when I get super into whether it's Myers-Briggs or Enneagram or whatever it is, right? I tend to then type people as I'm relating to them and be like, oh, okay, they are, and I try and put them in boxes.
Sure.
Is this something where like it's helpful for a leader to just automatically assume things about people? Or like how does then a leader relate to their team? Or is it helpful for the whole team to do the assessment so everybody's on the same page?
So I think that, to answer your question with a clear point, I think it's beneficial for the entire team to do it.
Yeah.
If one individual has done it, they've had the blinders taken off, they've had some light bulb moments, nobody else has had the benefit of that same level of discovery. And as you go through that sense of self-discovery, if you do this as a team, I've actually seen a lot of people in a team environment stop and say, wait a minute, you hate that? And it literally, all of a sudden, it's a light bulb moment where I've had a coworker, Eric, he was a strong D. And we were talking about our best day and our worst day in a work environment. And he was describing his best day. And as you looked at mine, his best day was my worst day. And we had no clue. And he quite literally looked at me and said, "I'm so sorry. Yeah. I thought we both loved this. And so I kept sending you these things and these invitations to these meetings. I had no idea I was causing you such stress and turmoil. Like, yeah, you're slowly killing me, but I had no idea you liked it. I thought everybody hated this stuff." So I think that going through it as a team, there's an opportunity, not just for self-reflection, but then you start to learn everyone else. And here's the value for the folks in the nonprofit world. Because you're wearing so many hats, because you're having to, okay, now I'm doing business development. Now I'm doing vendor or relations with our constituents and donors. And now you're getting into all of these different pieces of detail and minutia. Being able to do that same level of shifting with your team and understand how to best engage them and utilize them makes the entire operation more efficient. You don't have to wear every hat all the time. Maybe it's a matter of saying, I can do this. I hate it. This is soul crushing to me. But now you have an understanding of somebody that wants to do that sort of detail oriented deep work. Wow, wait a minute, hold on. You've never done this before, but from an operational behavioral standpoint, that's how you like to operate. Let's talk about this. Now you're developing others. You're sharing accountability. You're diversifying the workload. You're giving yourself a bleed valve as well. What happens if you take some time off? You want some PTO? You want to step away? You want to be there with your kids, your family, take a holiday? But if you do all the things, then how do you ever step away? Now you're actually involving other people in the nonprofit and getting them more tightly connected and invested. So it gives you an opportunity to grow the team. And it gives you an opportunity to give yourself a bleed valve for pressure. It also allows everyone to feel more connected. I had a conversation with a potential client. She was, at one point in her life, she was an executive at BMW. So very, very successful career. And she knew DISC, and the two of us were talking. And when I told her that I was a strong C, she's a strong D. And her phrase to me, quite literally, she said, you and I would hate each other. That's exactly what she said to me. Like, wow, okay. And I just laughed. And I said, well, Tina, actually, I think that one of the things I've learned is how to adapt really well. And so the two of us had this great 30 to 45 minute conversation. It was really engaging. We went back and forth. We were talking about different ideas. I told her, I said, actually, my wife is a DI as well. And so we've been married coming on 21 years now. I think if I can make it work in this context, I can adjust for a 30-minute conversation with a potential client. So it's that sort of ability to not just know yourself, but how to adjust to connect with other people when there might naturally be barriers. That really just helps to smooth processes as a whole.
Yeah. No, I love that. So I think something that is maybe a little bit of a blind spot maybe for nonprofit leaders in general, right, is that we have this constant need to go, right? We have we have massive issues of the world that we are trying to solve. And so when we say things like, we're going to do this team building, or we're going to take time for learning, we may have constituents or board members or even our team who's going, I don't have time for this. This takes away from the mission. It takes away from whatever. From your perspective, obviously learning drives, continuing learning drives a lot of what you do and a lot of what you coach for. Is this a case, would you say, of death by not doing it, right? Or, you know, or if somebody is maybe in one of those executive director type of roles and is having to justify, hey, we want to spend time and resources on our staff for this. What does it look like to really kind of embrace and propose that well?
So there's a gentleman by the name of Peter Senge. Years ago, he wrote a book called The Fifth Discipline. Okay. And while he was focusing more on for-profit business, he was talking about what's necessary for an organization to scale, to grow, to evolve over time, to maintain relevance. And similarly in the nonprofit space, we're trying to solve some serious issues. We're trying to make movement. We're trying to change the way culture or society operates. We're trying to serve the underserved. How do we do that? How do we continue to grow so that this stays relevant? We're achieving that goal and that purpose, and we have the opportunity to continue doing it over time. He essentially comes back to the concept that one of the key, not the only, but one of the key factors for companies, and I would argue nonprofits that can do this effectively, is to become what he describes as a learning organization. Learning, from his research, is a key catalyst for ongoing growth, relevance, and maintaining market share. So I understand, having coached salespeople in the past, for example, you're taking me out of a sales role. I'm supposed to be selling X, Y, or Z, and now you want me to give 30 minutes, an hour, a day in this training. Well, there's got to be a strong value proposition, right? You've got to have a strong reason for them to buy into that. So that's one thing, creating a strong value proposition. Secondarily, again, leaning into Senge's his research and showing organizations that continue to evolve and change, culture does not stay the same. Think about how radically the world has changed. And everybody kind of looks at it in our generation, like pre-COVID, post-COVID.
Yes.
It was dramatically different. It's not what it once was. if you don't continue to invest in yourselves and your people and allowing them to grow and adapt and develop new skills, their relevance starts to fade. So understanding that is key. I do think also your concern relative to getting the board approval, getting people on board to spend time or spend money, that's tough. So can you show a return on that investment? And frankly, here's one of the difficult things for what I do. Years ago, I had a conversation with, I was on the board for Harvard Business Review, and we were talking about this very thing. Like, how do you prove causality in learning? Sure. How can I prove that I did X training, and because of X training, Y occurred? I can show corollary data. I can't prove direct causality often. And I asked that question to the folks at Harvard, and they smiled and said, you figure that one out, you've got $1 million business. I'm like, well, that was not really helpful. Thank you. But I think what you can do is you can show a lot of strong corollary data. So in this example, did donations change at all? Do we have better CSAT scores? Are we doing things like polling our vendors and our donors and saying, like, what is your overall satisfaction with us? Do you understand what we're doing? Do you understand the mission? How engaged do you feel? Are we gaining new donors? So you can look at some of those pieces and you start to build a picture and say, I can't prove conclusively that this training or this learning or this course that we took did all of these different things. But there's a clear line in the sand that this is where we were before, and look at how this has happened and how it's been sustained over time. I think the other thing that really becomes beneficial and impactful is it has to be a top-down approach. For it to be successful, it has to be a leadership-driven paradigm. Because while we could set up a classroom training, we could teach DISC, for example, or we could teach leadership behaviors, that's great. Somebody needs to be coaching that. Somebody needs to be reinforcing that. Somebody needs to cascade that to the team to say, this is important. This is how we operate. And we're going to speak to those methodologies. We're going to speak to those principles. And we're going to hold each other accountable. Once that sort of organizational change has been implemented, and that's the way the team now operates, you can see it kind of just encompass the entire group, and that becomes the new operational norm. That can take some time, but that's really where the most impactful learning programs are put into effect, when they're a top-down approach.
Elevate your fundraising strategy effortlessly with DonorBox, the online fundraising platform that streamlines your operations, amplifies donations, and delivers a user-friendly experience for your supporters. Design captivating donation forms, accept digital wallet payments, seamlessly monitor donations, and automate receipt generation. Joining is a breeze with no setup or monthly fees. From customizable donation forms and 4x faster ultra-swift checkout to seamless in-person giving with DonorBox Live Kiosk, DonorBox makes giving simple and fast for your donors. Visit DonorBox.org and unlock your full fundraising potential today.
I have been in so many different organizations where people take the time, right? They make the investment. They all go through fill-in-the-blank assessment tool. Right. And then 6 months later, oh, yeah, that was a thing we did, or like a phase we had, but it's never like sunk into the culture. However, I was at one of our clients not too long ago. And they had gone through Strength Finders. Nice. And on the nameplate outside of everyone's office doors, they have their name and then their top five strengths as just this visual reminder. When I'm walking in to talk to you, regardless whether it's an easy conversation, a hard one, just to check in, hey, how's your day kind of going, brings it back to mind of like, this is who this person is, and this is the strengths they bring to the table, and I need to keep that in mind as I approach the conversation. I mean, I think that's a really clear visual example, but if somebody is taking the time to invest in DISC or whatever the assessment may be, what are some other, like, are there best practices around incorporating that into culture? Are there other ways that we can keep it top of mind easily?
Oh, yeah. So DISC is based off of research that's 80 years old. They've been doing research on this stuff for 80 years. And I'm kind of embarrassed to say this. Actually, sitting right beside me is the research manual for all of the study and the analysis that's gone into this.
Of course it is.
Let's just see. I've got to have
you
the
are
data,
who
right?
You are. Yes.
I can admit that. I can admit my nerdy tendencies. But here's the reason I bring this up. So what they've done is there's even been an evolutionary growth and impact in how something like DISC can be utilized beyond self-awareness, beyond being able to read someone else so that you can adapt and adjust your behaviors to meet theirs. That's one of the primary goals, right? Is to hear and be heard. And if I can eliminate barriers that exist in communication, now suddenly we're communicating in a more effective manner. They took those concepts and the research that framed the entire actual history of DISC, and now you can look at it being applied in a couple different ways. So they've done, Wiley and company has done a lot of research relative to how DISC impacts emotional intelligence and how being able, again, takes it kind of to a deeper level. If you think about it, it's not just self-awareness, but now it's understanding some of those subtle cues in human behavior. The way somebody's face may change, or a tone difference, or being able to be aware of that and how to layer that into your understanding of who that individual is. So it takes that concept into a deeper level of complexity. Similarly, they take this and they look at managerial concepts. How do you teach people to manage others, not lead? Leadership and management are two completely
very different.
Yeah. So how do you manage teams? And then you can even cascade it to their, how do you lead teams? So you mentioned the one client who's doing the Strengths Finder. I think that's a great thing to do. So having it in your cubicle, having it at your office door, just having DISC is a circular method where it's D, I, S, and C. You can have your dot existing on that. Same sort of thing, can have it there.
Yeah.
And that shows you where that person is and what their default operating mindset is. You also have to re-engage, and this goes back to the coaching piece. So say you're using StrengthsFinder, and you're a leader or a manager coaching somebody on your team. Well, if you know what their strengths are, great. Spend some time pouring into that and developing that. If you see areas that they're weaker as well, make sure that you spend time talking to those points. It's not to beat the individual up. It's to speak to how to make them well-rounded, to lean into their whole self-development. I think that's another way you bring it into the conversation, further reinforces actually applying it and using it. This goes back to why I believe that it has to be leadership driven. So if I have a leadership driven program and I say we're going to do something, then we do it. That creates trust.
Sure.
I can believe what you've just told me. This isn't a flash in the pan. This isn't the latest and greatest fad. And 6 months from now, we're going to try something else. But this is what we're doing. The absence of that is also true. If I say we're going to do something and then I never speak to it again, we never apply it, we never use it, what that creates is a lack of trust. And if you go back to Patrick Lencioni, he says that's the primary killer of an effective team is an absence of trust. So you've just subtly opened the door into your team getting weaker. If you're going to do it, do it. Go all in and apply it and let that cascade through the organization. The worst thing you can do is say, I'm going to do something and never follow through.
Yeah.
It's almost like the same thing with kids. You tell your child, if you do that again, X is going to happen. And they do whatever it is again, and you don't follow through with X. Kid's like, I got you now, Dad. Sorry.
Yeah.
You're in trouble. Same thing happens within nonprofits, corporations, doesn't matter. Behavior is behavior.
Thanks. So I'm going to maybe play devil's advocate for
Please.
A moment.
Okay.
So let's say, right, so we do the assessment on the team.
Yeah.
And we have, whether it's your strengths or your dot or your animal or your number, whatever.
However we're going to quantify the person
however
today,
however we,
right?
Like, put people in a box today.
Sure, sure.
Right, we put that out there. Is there a fear or is it something maybe to be aware of, or have you seen this where – I'll use your example, right? The trade show is maybe not the best place for you.
Yeah.
Right?
And yes.
Your skills do this, and my skills do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so where do we cross over? I feel like, and I could be wrong, so feel free to correct me. I feel like there is, though, some benefit to challenging people to get out of their comfort zones.
Oh, yeah.
100%. So what's the line between, I want to challenge you to grow.
Yep.
Versus I'm making you super uncomfortable and so, it's not worth it. Where's that line?
That's a great question. And frankly, growth is a bit uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
Think physical growth. My kids, I've got 15 down to 4. And so as they've grown over the years, they've all complained at different times about like knees hurt, legs. Like, guys, those are growing pains. I know it's not fun, but that means you're getting bigger. You're getting taller. If you go to the gym, as much as you hate running on that treadmill, it's causing your muscles, that stress and that strain is making you stronger. It's making you more efficient. So similarly, what we actually have to do is we have to push ourselves. Now, humans, generally speaking, this is a generalization, gross generalization. Sure. We avoid anything that's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
We are comfort oriented. So you're going to put me in a situation that's going to stress me. That's a fight or flight response. I'm going to avoid it. If I don't have to go there, then I don't have to feel that sudden spike in stress hormones. I don't have to have cortisol cursing through my body. I can avoid that. So we are comfort oriented. The problem is, if you don't lean into doing things that are difficult, if you don't lean into doing hard things, you cease to grow. You actually start to atrophy. The thing to keep in mind with all of this is that just because you have an operational behavior that's your default behavior, it doesn't mean you can't stretch in other capacities. So me going to a trade show, I know going there is going to be difficult. I know that all of the small talk and the engagement, that's going to be tiring to me. So I can plan for it, and I can have time afterwards where I'm able to recharge and be prepared for the next day. I know these things. And I can start to learn how to best adjust and adapt. So I think that just because we have a default wiring doesn't mean that that's where we live. I think that to continue to grow, you have to look to transcend that and look for opportunities outside of that. So years ago, that Hogan assessment where I said I had to sit down with a psychologist,
sure.
She asked me if I thought I was an introvert or an extrovert. And I said, you know, honestly, I'm very introvert. I like being at home where it's quiet, got my core group around me, my family. That's all I want. But as a trainer and a coach, put me in front of a classroom, and part of me that doesn't seem to even exist comes out, this different aspect of me, this different part of my personality that I don't typically tap into. And I said, so in those moments, I feel very extroverted, but by default, I'm an introvert. And she just laughed. She said, no, you're an ambivert.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I default to a C mindset doesn't mean that I can't stretch and move into an S. It doesn't mean that I can't be challenged by someone to apply D mindsets. Great. You don't have a complete picture. We've done all of the analysis we can possibly do. Decision. Go. So being challenged by a leader to lean into those other mindsets simply improves who I am and how I operate. It allows me also then to reach across the aisle more effectively to other people that don't have my innate wire. Again, it's not that just because I'm a C, that's all I am. No,
yeah.
It might be harder for me to flex, but I need to learn how to flex because that's how a team operates most effectively. So being challenged to do that is a great thing. So I wholeheartedly ascribe to the belief that leaders should challenge others to do uncomfortable things. There's a phrase I'm going to use, and forgive me, it's probably not couth. I'm not going to swear, but it's a little crass.
Okay.
It's a Navy SEAL phrase. They say, embrace the suck.
Mm.
If you think about basic underwater demolition school, BUDS, that first course they do for Navy SEAL training, they essentially learn to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Mm.
You got to be able to consistently lean into opportunities to grow, or you're going to stagnate and die. Growth is necessary. Change is necessary for us as individuals, for us as an organization. If we don't continually look to modify and adapt and grow and challenge ourselves, we start to atrophy. We start to lose relevance.
That's great. John, thank you. This has been really very insightful, and I think will be a good challenge to a lot of our listeners and our leaders. If somebody wanted to connect with you more and find out more about the work that you do at Elevated Learning, how do they find you?
So I'm not a great web designer, apparently. So my website is not yet public. However, I do have a page on LinkedIn. So if they went and searched Elevated Learning LLC, they'd be able to find me on LinkedIn. I'm connected to that. So if they wanted to reach out to me personally, same thing. I'm available through LinkedIn. Certainly not a problem. And also my email is john@elevatedlearningllc.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Again, this has been the Nonprofit Hub podcast, and my guest today is John Sarles, who is the president at Elevated Learning. John, thanks so much for taking the time today. I appreciate the insights.
Thanks, Megan. I enjoyed it.